From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from San Jose.
Hayward, California.
Nopa.
Kind of lower Russian Hill.
I live across from El Matate in San Francisco.
Coming up, we'll hear how the Bay Area is preparing for rising tides.
We have this period of time now in which we need to both plan and ultimately work to protect the communities around the Bay. But that's really hard to do.
Then we'll get up close and personal with the invasive frogs taking over Golden Gate Park.
These are cheap toy-looking amphibians with enormous hind claws and fat legs tapering into a simple wedge of a body.
And the answer to this week's mystery sound from Audiograph. Here's a hint. It's close to home.
Thank you very much for calling. May I have your name, please?
Sounds like a lot of love coming up on Cross Currents. As you know, we do a lot of listening here on the show. We use a lot of music, and we feature local bands every day. So we thought we'd start today's show with a peek into our musical minds. Over the past week or so, Cross Currents engineer Chris Hoff has been roaming the station, asking people what they're listening to these days. We'll be bringing you these throughout the show today. So before we get to our first story, here's one. Let's listen.
Hey, what's your name?
Hi, I'm David LaTulipe. I'm a KLW on-air host and arts producer, and I kind of help out with the web monkey business, all kinds of stuff here.
Excellent. I got a question for you, David. In the last month or so, what kind of music have you found yourself listening to a lot? Like, what's really been getting you excited?
I'd have to say Beethoven, because I'm about to perform with the Peninsula Symphony Orchestra, Beethoven's Sixth Symphony, and I'm playing the piccolo part and giving the pre-concert talk, so I got Beethoven on my mind.
Does he write good piccolo parts?
Pretty amazing. There's only a little bit of piccolo that comes in the Fifth Symphony, not until the last movement, and then in the Sixth Symphony, only in the storm movement. He creates this storm atmosphere with thunder and lightning, and then this piercing piccolo and timpani and bass drums, and it's amazing depiction and music of a storm.
Excellent. Thank you so much, David LaTulipe.
Certainly, Chris Hoff.
Thanks, Chris. We'll check in with you a bit later. Let's say in the near future.
The future. The polar ice caps have melted, covering the Earth with water. Those who survived have adapted to a new world.
In 1995, the movie Waterworld predicted catastrophic changes to sea levels, along with societal collapse and ensuing chaos. Okay. Honestly, it was kind of a flop. But Waterworld got one thing right. Scientists say melting glaciers are already contributing to rising sea levels and that they'll melt faster in the next century. Changes in California, with its thousands of miles of shoreline, could be dramatic. And that includes the Bay Area. Here in San Francisco, some scientists say the bay could rise as much as 5 feet, which would put the water line smack in the middle of the financial district. In Oakland, Jack London Square could be more like an aquarium. These cities and others around the bay are trying to figure out how to avoid that, and they've got some novel ideas. Aaron Mendelson brings us the story.
Nothing could defend New York City from the wall of water that came crashing ashore in one of the biggest storms so far of the 21st century.
That's a clip from CBS News right after Superstorm Sandy devastated the East Coast late last year. It's the kind of thing that drives home the need to prepare for stronger storms and higher seas. Here in California, we haven't had an event quite like that. But that doesn't mean people aren't thinking about it.
Nothing focuses your mind like the sound of the gallows being built outside of your cell door. Well, people look at other things that go around the world, other circumstances, and think, can it happen here?
Larry Goldspan is director of the San Francisco Bay Conservation and Development Commission. His downtown office overlooks the bay from the 26th floor. It's a great view, but I wondered how much sea level rise could change it.
I'm not going to say that nobody knows, but nobody knows.
Here's what we do know. For about 400 years, the Earth's sea levels were actually going down. Then, about 100 years ago, they started to rise. They've gone up about 8 inches so far, enough to make Ocean Beach a little narrower. However,
the state of California has an estimate, which basically says that by the year 2100, we can expect something between 31 and 69 inches of sea level rise. So that basically means 2.5 to about 6 feet.
At that rate, Oakland and San Francisco airports could be underwater in just decades. Tech giants like Google and Facebook, both in low-lying areas, are also vulnerable. Goldspan's job is to urge local governments to start planning now. Building seawalls and rehabilitating wetlands could protect some shorelines, but other places may need more dramatic interventions.
I think it's interesting to see folding water as a reframing of a problem, which is shoreline protection.
In 2009, Goldspan's agency sponsored a contest called Rising Tides. They asked designers and architects how to protect cities from a rising sea. One of the winning entries was called Folding Water. Elizabeth Raineri designed the project with her husband Byron Kuth, and they're working to make the concept a reality. Raineri describes the design as a ventilated levee.
When there's a crisis, that levee can transform, that adaptable levee can change and shift and accommodate that disaster.
Imagine standing on Pier 39 and looking out at a big basin in the middle of the bay, not too far offshore. The basin catches water that flows in from behind it, then pushes most of that water right back out through underwater vents. So the excess water is constantly circulating back into the bay, away from the shore, while water levels around the pier stay the same. Raineri compares it to the way a pacemaker regulates blood flow to the heart.
More like something that's internal to the body, that can help the body regulate or be regulated on its own terms.
The architects are currently focused on designing a levee off Richardson Bay in Marin and making sure the math and architecture of the plan check out.
Yeah, like we would like to think that 40 is the new 50. I think that the 100-year flood is the new 20-year flood, and that we cannot... We can't rest. We have to be extremely focused on getting ahead of this. And there is time.
But at this point, folding water is just an idea, and an actual levee is years away, if it's built at all. Other projects looked at sea level rise differently. One project proposes beaming lasers along sites where governments might build dikes to jumpstart a conversation about what areas need to be protected. Another would build a lock under the Golden Gate Bridge that would rise up during high tide. A third envisions huge evaporation towers that send unwanted water up into the atmosphere. Like folding water, though, none of these projects have taken off. But around the Bay Area, governments are starting to think practically about how rising seas will affect their shores.
We're right in front of a tidal channel in Redwood City, near the port and near the marina. And
I meet Matt Soibert at the Bear Island Marina. He's a planner for San Mateo County, and his job is to help them get ready for climate change, including sea level rise.
San Mateo County and Orange County will be the most affected by sea level rise of all the counties in California, and that's because we have so much low-lying area, especially here along the bay.
He points out that critical areas are barely above sea level, things like San Carlos Airport, and a women's jail that actually flooded last year. Then there's all the other infrastructure, like roads and homes. Soibert's been working on the climate plan here for 2 years, and he says that sea level rise is a serious threat. But when I ask what the county is doing to protect places like where we're standing, he's at a loss.
We don't have any particular project underway here in San Mateo County, and we don't have any particular, at this point, any timeline for any particular measure to mitigate sea level rise.
He says they're looking at things like restoring marshes, which act as buffer zones against the sea. They're also considering raising levees. But all this takes a lot of planning.
And you have cities, you have the county, you have the state You have the federal government, the U.S. Army Corps. And so there's a lot of overlapping jurisdiction. And then there's also a lot of environmental review through the California Environmental Quality Act that needs to be undertaken for anything that would be significant. Just the planning parts of those can drag out for quite a while, years even.
Soibert says what's important is that they're working on the problem, that it's early in the game and there's still time to find solutions. Elsewhere in the Bay, some projects are underway. In San Francisco, the Public Utilities Commission plans to spend up to $40 million building a barrier to keep ocean water out of the sewage treatment system. Construction will happen at 29 different places along the bay, and it should take about 5 years. And at Oakland's airport, a $44 million project will protect the busiest runway by raising and strengthening dikes. That should be done by 2016. Back in his office, Bay Conservation Director Larry Goldspan applauds these kinds of efforts.
We have this period of time now in which we need to both plan and ultimately work to protect the communities around the bay. But that's really hard to do. And it's really hard to do because nobody's done it before. So we're sort of building the airplane as we fly it.
For Cross Currents, I'm Aaron Mendelson.
Aaron Mendelson is a reporter with the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. For more information about sea level rise, including the video about folding water, head to our Facebook page. We're KALW. Coming up, we hear about another way climate change is affecting the waters and the creatures who reside in them. But first, let's check back in with KALW's Chris Hoff, who asked our staff what music they're into these days.
Hello, please tell me your name.
Hi, my name is Casey Miner. I am the senior editor for KALW News.
Hey, Casey, I have a question. What kind of music have you been listening to in the last couple of weeks?
Well, I have been seeking out new instrumental tracks. I'm trying to find music to work to. So there's actually been quite a variety. I've been listening to some Bach, and that all the way ranging to like instrumental kind of Appalachian bluegrassy music.
Which Bach pieces do you know?
Goldberg Variations, is that right? Yes, the Goldberg Variations.
Who is the pianist?
The pianist is Glenn Gould.
Is it the 1955 or the 1981 version?
It is the 1981 version.
Well, thanks so much, Casey Miner.
You're very welcome, Chris Hoff.
We'll be back with Chris later for one more musical interlude. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. San Francisco may change with the climate, but for now at least, it's still a place where many different species are preserved. Head to Golden Gate Park, for example, and you can find rare flowers, fish, even bison. But where there's an open space, there are also invasive species, specifically African clawed frogs. A study published earlier this month in the scientific journal PLOS ONE finds that they carry a deadly fungus and that it might be too late to control the damage they've done. In this piece from our archives, science commentator Max McClure explains what's going on.
Science loves a frog. And why not? They're easily disassembled, they produce large numbers of transparent embryos, and they walk kind of goofy. But our dissectable friends aren't doing so well. Scientists have also noted that amphibian extinction rates appear to be anywhere from hundreds to tens of thousands of times higher than usual. There are many reasons for this, but it certainly doesn't help that frogs are currently in the midst of the deadliest vertebrate pandemic of all time. It's just a lowly skin fungus, albeit one with a fancy name, Batrachochytrium dendropatitis, or BD. But when it latches onto amphibians, the mold prevents them from exchanging electrolytes through their delicate skin, leading to cardiac arrest. Over the past few decades, the disease has severely affected more than 200 amphibian species on 6 continents. If you go to Lily Pond and Golden Gate Park, though, you'll see it's full of frogs. but they're not your standard Californian variety. Those guys are falling to the fungus. These are cheap toy-looking amphibians with enormous hind claws and fat legs tapering into a simple wedge of a body. Inelegance aside, they're doing very well. No heart attacks for them. That's partially because they're resistant to BD. But, and this is important, it's also because they carry it. The frog occupying Golden Gate Park is called Xenopus, the African clawed frog. As you might have guessed from the name, they're not from here, and they're extremely unwelcome. It's now pretty clear that their spread out of Africa was behind the BD pandemic. How did they get all the way over here? It's all about the eggs. Xenopus is an unusually prolific and hardy egg layer, which biologists know for a pretty crazy reason. Back in the 30s, a zoologist with the stunningly British name of Lancelot Hogben discovered that the frog was a really effective pregnancy test. That's because it responds to the same hormone that most pregnancy tests look for today. Want to know if you're expecting? Simply inject your urine into one of these frogs, and if it lays a clutch of eggs, you're pregnant. This worked so well that by World War II, British labs were already storing dozens of frogs on site in large galvanized metal tanks. Even the Family Planning Association clinic in London kept a few on call in the basement. But the bigger news, at least from the freaky perspective of lab biologists, was that this hormone turned the frog into the egg-laying machine they needed for large-scale developmental studies. By the 1940s, the animals were common clinical and lab equipment all around the world. Xenopus has since played an integral part in our understanding of not just development, but neurobiology, RNA, the cell cycle. It was even the first vertebrate to be cloned. Unfortunately, the frogs are also notoriously good at escaping from those labs. It didn't take long for wild populations to establish themselves in South America, Wales, and yes, California, along with a certain deadly skin fungus, which it's been spreading for nearly the past 70 years. In case you were wondering, the frog apocalypse we're now seeing has major consequences for humans. Amphibians are important parts of global food webs. They control pests, and they're promising sources of new medicines. But it's also worth pointing out that this biodiversity is important in and of itself. In order to study anything in a lab, you need to simplify things. That's what Xenopus is, a simple generic model, an every frog. But whenever you focus in on a model, you end up tuning out the complexity of the real world. Normally, this just means you make some incorrect assumptions, but in this case, something more worrisome is going on. The model is actually making the real world disappear, forever. There's an old physics joke about a couple of physicists who are asked to help a dairy farm increase milk production. They come up with a solution, but their equations only work in the case of a spherical cow. Imagine if those equations started bleeding into the real world, cows magically puffing up around the globe. Alternately, just look at Lily Pond, and at the unintended consequences of science's love for a frog, a pond full of pregnancy tests.
Max McClure is a science writer. Find links to more of his work at kalw.org. Coming up, the answer to this week's audiograph mystery sound. But first, let's check back in with Chris Hoff for the last time today and see who he's got.
Golden rose, the color of the dream I live. Not too long ago.
Hey, how's it going? What's your name?
My name is Matt Martin. I'm the general manager here at KALW.
Hey, Matt, I had a question for you. What kind of music have you been really excited about recently? Like, what have you been listening to in the last couple weeks that's really been getting you going?
I rediscovered Jimi Hendrix's One Rainy Wish. God, that is an amazing song. It just makes me smile and laugh when I hear that song, when it kicks in.
What is so amazing about it to you?
Oh, he kind of starts with the kind of hippie poetry stuff, but then he just slams in the guitar, and it just makes me laugh. I don't know why it is.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Today we're doing things a little differently for the weekly audiograph sound. We'll play it right now, and you'll have 5 seconds to think about it. Ready, go.
Thank you very much for calling. May I have your name, please?
Okay, what was that sound, and where did it come from? We sent KALW's Julie Kane to the source, and here's a hint. She didn't have to go far.
I'm Brenda Kett. I'm one of the volunteers at KALW, and we're in the green room of the radio station. You should see it. It's amazing. Two tables pushed together and 8 telephones. That's how we do it.
My name is Tom Mason, and I'm speaking to the world from the phone room at KALW Radio.
How long have you been a volunteer here?
About 25 years.
Wow, that's a long time to be coming in to help out.
Yeah, well, I didn't do it all at once, so it works out pretty well this way.
I'm André Glacé. You know, I didn't used to listen to the radio, and then I discovered KALW, and I especially like the fact that listeners can call in and they're treated with such great respect.
Hi, thanks for calling. I think that I talked to you last time you called. How many years have you been doing this?
Oh, I don't know, maybe 15 or 20. I don't remember. So
what makes you want to get up at 5:30 on a morning to...
Oh, to see Joe Burke, of course. How could one not want to do that? The early morning people are the best. They have fabulous sense of humor, and they're just really wonderful to be around. We're all great friends at this point.
Would you like a thank you gift, or do you want your pledge to go entirely toward programming?
What if we all
thank you?
Thank you.
Okay. 2, 3.
Thank you!
Yay! May we read your name on the air to thank you? This is a very full room. We're celebrating.
She said yes, so a big thank you to Gene Knox and everybody else who made those phones ring all last week in our 7.5-day membership drive. And we thank you for every dollar you gave and every email we got from you. A number of you called with answers and got it right. We have a winner, Robert Weiner. Congratulations, Robert. We're sending you a KALW t-shirt. To our phone volunteers, thank you. And special thanks to Brenda Kett, who was named Volunteer of the Year by the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. She'll be honored at their conference here in San Francisco that starts on Wednesday. And keep listening. There'll be another mystery sound contest next week. In the meantime, go to KALW.org to hear more from Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. That's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Dora Finkelstein, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Christina Loring, Daphne Matsiaraki, Seth Samuels, Stephen Short, Eva Sonsin, and Adam Teitelbaum. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Our executive editor is Ben Trefney. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thank you. We are indeed listener-supported radio. It just can't happen without you.
Drink it while we have breath, for there's no drinking after death, and he who will his health deny.
Down on the dead men,
down on the dead men, down on the down men, down among the dead men, let him lie.
The lusty singing you're hearing is by the a cappella group The Philistines. They're performing at this year's Night of Beer and the Music That Goes With It. The event is co-sponsored by VoiceBox, an original KALW program heard on Friday nights. It takes place next Wednesday at the 50 Mason Social House in San Francisco. Music starts at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
In smiling Bacchus' joys I'll roll, deny no pleasure to my soul. And Bacchus will frown briskly move, for Bacchus is a friend to love, and he that will his health deny.
Down, down among the dead men, let him lie.
May love and wine their rights maintain, and their united pleasures reign. About those special crowns no board, we'll sing the joys that both afford, and in the vault with us comply.
Down, down.